Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
It's one of these things with add value. God has a, you know, sometimes you just have to find a way to add value. Mm-hmm. And what you said about the tour is key too, because a lot of people want to travel.
Just being an extra, like, homie, and not, no, not saying, I'm saying, like, you know, extra.
That's real, that's real. You can say that, it's
talk. Everybody has to, you know, it has to make sense, you know, and it's dope to want to bring everybody and bring your people,
right?
But everybody should have a purpose. You know, make sure everybody's doing it. No matter what they're doing, mm-hmm. They could be this, they could be the barber, they could be, but as long as they're adding value so that they're not just bodies that are just taking up, you know, space and money.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop, a mic drop, bag drop.
All right.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, guys. Welcome back. EYL. We back stateside.
Yeah.
Shout out to the UK. Shout out to France. Shout out to Europe. All the love that we got over there, man. That was a legendary run.
Shout out to Germany.
Germany, for sure. Yeah. But now we back stateside. and back doing what we like to do as far as cover culture. If you know EYL, if you're an EYL historian, you know the first tagline was the backstories of sports and entertainment.
Okay.
So that was the actual first, the first kind of concept was to talk about finance, but talk about like from a sports and entertainment perspective. So did like 50 Cent Vitamin Water deal, Soulja Boy.
Dipset Supreme.
Dipset Supreme. Of course, Jay-Z.
Of course.
And all the different things that he's done. So that was always the core. And then we kind of just grew into business, financial literacy. We started talking about stocks, crypto, and all that stuff. But we always stayed true to our core of culture, music, hip-hop, entertainment, sports, yeah, all
life.
That stuff. Yeah, that's kind of the stuff that we grew up on.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a dope. This is a dope. I always like these conversations. I always say some of my favorite interviews, Chris Gotti.
Yes.
Dame Dash.
Absolutely.
Dope.
Who else fits in that mold?
Fat Joe.
Fat, but I'm talking
storyteller.
About the behind the scenes
aspect. The guys that...
Like the guy,
the stories,
yeah,
Dave, truly told. Yeah, yeah.
But Joe's still dope too, because even though he's an artist and he's in front, he still is kind of like in the backside, because he's a real fan and a real historian of the culture. So the way he tells them stories from many perspectives,
And Terror Squad is a label that is his label.
Yeah. Jason Jeter also, he's another one with a bunch of good stories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So today we got Lenny Santiago, better known as Lenny S.
Lenny S.
What's up, brothers?
I don't pose the threat. Blame Lenny S for that.
Holla at your boy.
I'm here to learn about financial literacy. This is actually a class. Okay. You can go to the podcast, but this is just my class for financial literacy.
All right.
This nothing happens before it's time. We got to start there. Mm-hmm. Because we met before. Mm-hmm. You probably won't remember this.
I'm thinking.
So this is crazy. We were at the going to the Pyatt Moore show in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
This is like 2019, mm-hmm. and I tapped Shadi. I'm like, "Yo, Lenny S," because we had wrote down people we want to sit down with.
Yeah,
he's like, "Yo, holla at him." I'm like, "Saying, I think he was with your man." I think,
yeah, it was the one in Brooklyn at the theater.
The theater, yeah. And I walked up. Yep. I'm like, "Yo, telling you what we do. We got this podcast."
Yeah.
At the time, we were calling that. It's bigger than that now, but I'm like, "Yo, we got this podcast. We're talking about the behind the scenes of sports and entertainment. Love to have you on." You're kind of like, yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, we just did DJ Envy." Because at the time, we had literally just did DJ Envy.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the Empire Strikes Back mixtape.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, "Yo, I need that third." I noticed
that
Envy said he has there's another Siegel verse.
Third verse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you know where we were going with that. Shout out to Kiss. And he was like, yeah. He was like, "Yeah, just keep going, guys, keep going." I'm like, I went back to him. He was like, "How'd it go?" I'm like, "Nothing happens before it's time." I said, "Nothing happens before it's time, man." So this is like a full circle.
It is. With me, it's really just being consistent. Because you got to think, you know, I have...
Yeah, we got it.
I'll be modest and say dozens. I mean, it's a lot.
I respect it.
I mean, through social media, through in person, if I go somewhere, like, there's a lot of just people like that kind of stuff. I got an artist, so I got to... And it's like, I want to address it all. And I really do mean it. I'm like, let's...
Yeah.
It'll happen. Like,
we're gonna get it. We're gonna make it happen.
One of the best things I heard was Diddy said this on Instagram a while ago. He was like, "I'm looking to connect with black creators, black film directors." Da, da, da. He was like a whole list of people that he wanted to connect with. He was like, "Find me."
Yeah. Okay,
people in the comments were like, "What?" But I understood what he was saying. Like, it's like, get to the point where you're hot enough where you're going to get referred, and now it makes sense. Like,
sooner or later, you can't deny me.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. It started coming around little by little.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I even dated an accountant. She was like, "Are you leisure?" Like, okay. You're saying that because you're a fucking accountant. But no. I love when things come at me and my man. And you guys know Nicole.
I mentioned
Nicole. Hit me. It was like, "These are my guys." And I was like, "Nah, I've been watching. They're really dope."
It's
like,
Diddy too.
Whatever they
Diddy
need.
Was like, Diddy was like, "That's my guy. Let's make this happen." Like,
whatever you need.
Shout out to Nicole. She put this together. So Lenny S, legend in the entertainment game.
Mm-mm.
You don't like the word legend?
I'm not a legend, but I'm
going with that.
Trying to do my thing.
So this is going to be an interesting conversation. Started at the street team, I believe, right?
Started at the street team level doing street promotions. Yeah.
Worked his way up to music executive, manager extraordinaire. He manages DJ Khaled, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
It's called the biggest.
I help. I'm part of the,
the biggest.
Was part of the two biggest regimes in hip hop history.
Easily.
Bad Boy.
At the height of it.
Yeah, Bad Boy and then Rockefeller. That's like going from the Boston Celtics to the Lakers. Like Boston Celtics to the Lakers in the 80s and then in the 2000s. So this is going to be a legendary situation. Lenny S., I'm sure you probably heard his name all throughout rap. He might be one of the most mentioned people in Jay-Z's rap. He doesn't really mention a lot of people, but he mentions your name a lot.
Once or twice. I'm grateful.
So yeah, man, this is going to be a dope conversation. So first and foremost, thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the journey. A lot of people are familiar with you now. They heard your story. But your career is over probably 25, 30 years.
25,
right?
Yeah, 22 decades. So 25, yeah.
How did it start? I know it started on street promotion, which now there is no such thing.
Yeah, people are like, what is funny, that exactly? Right?
Social media street promotion.
That is it, right? Like,
you know what's funny, though? I saw was it All-Star Weekend? I saw quality control posters, which is pretty dope.
Yeah, I saw
you know what I'm saying? So I'm saying, but you know, those are guys, Coach and P, they understand what that is. So it was dope to see that, like, oh shit.
You come from
like,
that.
It was all over, like, by the hotels and everything. So, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't really exist a lot in a little lost art. But I mean, you know, it served its purpose at the time. There was no social media, there was no, like, outlets really to kind of like, you know what I'm saying? So that's what it was. It was really putting in the footwork, the groundwork, going literally hand-to-hand, going outside of concerts, parties, you know, seminars, car shows, anything where you thought, you know, our audience was. If there was a hip-hop movie opening up, you know, like Friday, anything like that, you know, okay, that's our audience, that's what we're going to go promote. And that's how we had to get the word out.
Stickers, street signs. At one point, you had the flag. Just waving the flag.
Oh, yeah.
some of the best, I think Rough Riders might have had the best that I've ever seen. With the motorcycles.
Bikes. And
the
bikes. Because they had the gear.
Jackets.
They were out
of
here.
It was just, you know, it's an interesting business case study because it's a form of marketing that is no longer around. But there's still things that you can actually implement from that era now.
Yep.
As far as like the Blitz promotion and the merch. And all of that stuff is still kind of relevant now. It's just in a different form. Yep. So like when you started working, that was with Bad Boy?
That was actually a little bit before then. So I had some friends of mine who I was fortunate to have that were in the business. So I got a little like, not to say a cheap way in, but a little head start in. But again, nothing official. So that was like Showbiz and AG, The Legion, and Black Sheep. You know, so Drez lived in the Bronx for a while. So, and you know, The Legion were my guys. So I got to go out with them, and the Drez, you know, Drez had shows, whichamacallit was out, Choice Is Yours was out. It was the biggest record. So imagine, you know, I wanted to be in the music business already, dying to be in it, and like I got some friends in the neighborhood who actually have a hit record. So I was
in the music business, not as an artist though.
Oh, no. I mean, I wanted to be an artist very early on, but I came to my senses and I was just like, you know what? You know what's funny? I gave myself like a sort of like an option of like, if I make it in the, meaning like if I get an internship or a job, I'm not gonna be an artist. Mm. But I'll try to be an artist up until that happens and whichever one comes first. And I had a partner, God bless him, he passed recently, but I had a hip, you know, rap partner and I told him the same. I was like, yo, whichever comes first. So when I got the internship at Bad Boy, I was like, I didn't wanna be the guy in the office doing that, and then also like, yo, a rap too. Like, you know what I'm saying?
So what year was the Bad Boy internship?
95. Yeah, because I was only there a year, and I don't take any credit at all for like, you know, Rock, I've been there from day one. I'm a part of the team, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But Bad Boy, I came in when they were already on fire. My brother Super Mario put me on, and it was an amazing year, a year and a half, whatever it was. It was short-lived, and then Rockefeller started 96.
Yep.
And I was already a big Jay fan. I had already, you know, seen them out and about. My friend Ray Ray was working with them doing radio promotion, so that was going to be my end. Mm-hmm. So I immediately went to Rock. I wanted to be somewhere where I believed in, but also that was starting from scratch because I wanted to be a part of what Bad Boy built. Yeah. And when I was there, I didn't feel like that because they were, you know, they was already did their thing.
Ready to Die was already out.
Yeah, they did their thing for years. Yeah. I came into a great team, but I didn't help build that. You know what I'm saying? And I wanted to go somewhere to be a part of something from the beginning.
So you're at Rockefeller. At the time,
he's working on
Reasonable Doubt.
He's working on it, yeah.
Wow.
It wasn't out yet, yeah.
So how'd you enter into that Rock? You didn't know Jay?
I knew Jay by face. So I knew Jay and Dan. Remember, I was everywhere. Okay. My whole goal from high school, go anywhere that there is music stuff going on. If I heard about a video, I went to the video. If I heard about a seminar, in store, I don't care if Nas or Leah was signing autographs at whatever stuff. I went, anything music, because I figured whatever music related was going on, it was going to be music related people or artists or their, and I read credits. So I knew every person. Oh, Nas is going to be, I know Jungle. I know, I don't know them, but I know.
Trying
to establish relationships.
That's very important. And it was crazy. I said this in London. I was talking to somebody. I said, the two biggest keys in business is to stay close and to add value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that seems like it's easy, but so many people cannot do that. Yeah. And it's like, what you're talking about, so many people fail that part of it, where it's like, just be in the right place.
Yo, yeah. How many times have we said that? Like, mm-hmm. even every time we get on stage, I say the same thing. It's not about being in the right place at the right time. It's being in the right place all the time. And you're literally studying the people. Like, you know all the people. It feels like our story in a sense. It was like, I remember reading credits and I know every producer.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
I know everybody's on the team. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, this makes perfect sense. I want to see these people one day. I'm going to meet these people
one day. I studied that whole shit. I studied Jay's whole crew. I was saying what's up to Beehive's cousin. Like, Tata, I was like, yo, Tata. Like, and you know, you do it so familiar, they're like, man, do I know this guy? Because
it gets done
to me now. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are like, yo, Lenny, yes, what up, bro? You been good? And I'm like, good. Like, I'm like, oh shit, I don't know if I know them. Or
what that sound like? I'm telling you, we ran into Hop in LA, and I was just like, yo, that's Hop over there.
Yeah.
We were walking, they were like, I'm like, that's hip hop, like,
yeah, legend.
That's a legend. Right there. Like, we got,
that's a legend.
And we sat down and had a conversation with them, and it was ironic that we could have had Biggs. Biggs is going to be on the show.
Yeah, that's a good one to be on.
Yeah, yeah, and we kind of ran into each other at the same time. It was like,
see?
Man, you know all these people I looked up to. This is incredible.
You do it all without breaking a sweat. Like being a boss exec to Tuesday tennis to homework. Why do kids have so much homework? Family dinners, lunches, brunches, trips to the vet, and a weekend getaway that's anything but a getaway. And you do it all in style. Even when you have back-to-back conference calls on top of the kids' orchestra recitals, not to mention your side hustle. That's why they created the fully reimagined Infiniti QX60, a luxury SUV as functional as it is stylish and as versatile as it is serene, with premium features like a panoramic moonroof, ample cargo space, and available massaging front seats to bring the ease of luxury to your everyday. Introducing the all-new Infiniti QX60, designed to help you take on life and all the chaos that may come with it in style. Learn more at InfinityUSA.com. Now with extremely limited availability, contact your local retailer for inventory information.
Yeah.
And when you guys put in your work, now it becomes that much easier, right? Because they're familiar with it, or they heard about it, or their friend did the podcast, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah.
So, all right. So you had all of these different clubs, all these different events, mm-hmm. everything, record signings, and your face becomes familiar.
Yeah.
So what leads to you actually getting in the door and actually getting a position?
That's what led to it, exactly what you said. It was my face became super familiar, and the guy Super Mario, who was like a big, heavy promo guy back then, he's the one that was about to get the job with Puff. And that's when he was like, yo, I see you everywhere, who you work with? And I was like, I don't even know what to say. I was like, I'm just out here. Because like, I didn't really, you know what I'm saying? And I would be promoting my guys, Black Sheep and them and the Legion, but remember, that I didn't work for the label or them. I just did something like, I got to look like I'm in this shit.
Yeah.
So that's when he was like, yo, you don't work nowhere. I was like, nah. He was like, bet. He was like, if I get this job with Bad Boy, you won. Like, mm-hmm. you good. And like 2 weeks later, man, he hit me 3 weeks later and was like, yo, I got it. Like, you on. So me, I'm at working at this lighting company. I'm actually building lights. Building.
Like an electrician?
Yeah. Building lights, right? And dying to get in the music business. And I get that call and I'm like, ow. Quit.
Fired my job.
Fuck me. Like, no. By the way, got to the Bad Boy and it was no pay. It was like, it was a street team. You know what I'm saying? So like, whatever, I jumped out the window, but it didn't matter. You know what I'm saying? It's nothing more I wanted to do. I used to tell everybody, I used to have a lot of friends that worked in the business. There was this guy named Lindsay, who his family is Sylvia's. They own Sylvia's restaurant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I got to see those things early on, and Lindsay worked for Def Jam. So Lindsay was bringing Slick Rick to the block. 87, 88. I mean, I'm seeing this like, this is what I want to do. You know what I'm saying? So I used to tell, but I was 10, 11, 12, 13, you know what I'm saying? I used to tell those guys, like, yo, let me, but you know, as a 12, 13-year-old, they're looking at me like, what? Like,
out of here, kid.
Yeah. But that's how ambitious I was. And the point is, I always told everybody, I just need a shot. Like, if you just give me a free shot, I'm going to prove. Because I really didn't even know what, I was listening to you guys' podcast with Ross, And you know how Ross was talking about how he went through the businesses and he didn't even know about them.
Yeah.
He just did it and learned as he went. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing. I didn't know what I wanted to do in music business. I didn't know what if there was a retail person, a promotions person, radio person, A&R. I didn't know any of those titles. So I just was like, I'll figure it out as I get there. I know that I'm hungry enough, I'm ambitious enough, and I'm driven enough. And that's it. If you tell me this is what you got to do, you got to call every radio station or every retail store and make sure that our product is there, then just give me the assignment.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
So you start Street Team. You're at the Reasonable Doubt. So Reasonable Doubt, you know.
Oh, but how did you get to Rockefeller?
Rockefeller was through a friend of mine named Ray Ray. Ray Ray was a promotion guy as well, just like Super Mario was. And Ray Ray used to work at like Penalty Records or something. And he used to give me like little small bags. You know, I got to work with Nori. That's how I met Nori.
Yeah.
Me and Nori became brothers way back. Wild story. But anyway, so Ray Ray left Penalty when Rockefeller started and went as the promotion guy. So office brand new, 1995. It's only like Dame, Biggs, Jay, Ray Ray, and like maybe one or two, Christy Clifford, and like maybe one other person. It was like Rockefeller Records was like six people. So that was my in. It was like Ray Ray. So I went, harassed him. He already knew me. He knew how hard I went. He was like, "Bet, I got you."
Yeah.
And then I got in a room. He was like, "You just got to talk to Dame and Jay." Just so, you know. And when I got in the room, I got shitted on.
Oh, talk about that.
That's what I was. Yeah.
When I got in the room, they immediately knew me from the street, and they knew me from the Bad Boy promotion.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew me as a Bad Boy promoter, and then they were both like, nah, he's a Bad Boy. Like, we want Rockefeller,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying,
right.
Street Team.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, quit. And they was like, nah, we good. And I'm like, no, I actually left Bad Boy to come here. Nah, we good. So they didn't put me on, cool. I told Ray Ray to give me any product that he would receive and just let me know everywhere Jay and Dame and Biggs were gonna be. So if he had a little club date, I just got the schedule and I showed up everywhere. Me and my man Bert showed up everywhere. Just, you know what I'm saying? When every time they come out, they see it. They know they don't have no street team,
yeah.
And they don't have no staff. So it's like, who's putting this up? So I made sure they saw every time until after a few months.
It was just like, all right. But what made you leave Bad Boy at its peak? Because Bad Boy's on fire at that time.
Bad Boy's on fuego, right?
And take a chance with an up and coming. Relatively, like it's a risk at that point, huh?
Big risk, but I thought, honestly, I swear to God, I'm gonna be honest. I didn't know Jay was gonna be this big, but I knew Jay was gonna be the biggest.
Mm.
It's just, he was just too good. He was too prolific. He was too profound. He was too, and I didn't know him personally at that time. I'm just saying, as a fan of the music, listening to him on Big Daddy Kane, listening to him on.
And this is before the first album.
This is in my lifetime. You can't listen to In My Lifetime and watch that video that they funded and not think this guy is like.
Well, this is interesting because around that time, like I was young, but mm-hmm. I was heavily into rap at that time. And I remember when Jay first came out, even after the album came out, people still wasn't really fully respecting him. Like I remember, like I was telling my cousin, I'm like, yo, this kid Jay-Z, like he's dope. And he like, Jay-Z, he like, who, A-Z? I'm like, no,
Jay-Z. Yeah. AZ was bigger than him at the time.
I'm like, no, Jay-Z.
Another guy from
this.
Brooklyn.
He got this song, like, he's dope. Like, it's his whole album. The whole album is dope. So I say that to say, that's even before that. So it's for you to say that you knew he was going to be the biggest, that's a lot because Big was around.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang was around. Nas was around.
Let's look at this,
Dogs
right?
Was killing.
This is a small example, but like even stuff like at the time, everybody was wearing Versace. So everybody from Biggie to everybody talked about Versace. Jay didn't say Versace. Jay said the Medusa had turned me to stone. Like what?
Yeah.
How the fuck can you describe Versace like that? Where everybody else is like, I got the Versace. I got the Medusa had turned me to stone. Like he was just like, he just had a different perspective to me. And again, I wasn't with them in the street, but listening to it, you felt how real it was. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
You know, we forgot to mention at that time, because we only think in the East Coast, but at that time, you got Pac. Oh, and you got Snoop, just dominating. Completely
dominating.
But I want to go back to something because it's pretty big, and this can relate to business, is that value add.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they told you no, right? Because most people won't do that. They'll get turned down and say, all right, let me go find another opportunity. You got turned down and said, nah. Let me still add value. Let me just help. And it led to that. So like—
For free.
For free.
100%.
Most people won't even like—
They won't do something if you pay them.
If you pay them, they still not gonna do it.
That's a fact.
That determination, that grit, like where did it come from?
There's nothing else I wanted to do. I don't wanna like sound redundant or like cheesy, like I had to be in the music business. And I had to be in the music business with somebody that I really loved. You know what I'm saying? Like if we were in these times, I would have, you know, OVO or something. It would have, there's, you know what I'm saying? There's certain people that I love or respect or a team or a crew, or I gotta be in that organization. Cause this is what I love, this is what I believe in. And I believe that I can add value to what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? So Rock J to me was like, this is the guy.
Yeah.
This is the guy.
So at what point do they say, after like they've turned you down, but you're still showing up, you still have a guy, and they're like, you know what? Let's add Lenny to the team.
Yeah, it was a few months later, and it was just like, all right.
Whose decision was it? Jay Dame?
Yeah, Jay and Dame. Biggs was always quiet. Like, Biggs obviously made decisions with them, but I didn't have no relationship with Biggs. Like, Dame was the CEO, obviously super talkative. So, you know, he was outspoken.
Dame,
so, you know, Jay was obviously, you know, who he is. He's just more reserved and chill. But I got to develop my relationship with Jay because of the studio. Because when I transitioned from street team to A&R, I was able to be in the studio. And hip-hop was the A&R, the only A&R at the time. And again, I found my way in. I was like, okay, I want to be an A&R, but I don't have A&R experience. Yeah. So I've never signed an artist. I've never signed a producer. I don't have A&R experience. I think I could figure it out. But so anyway, the way I figured it out was hip-hop was the only A&R at the time. A&R comes with creative direction, and then it also comes with administrative work. It has to be both. You have to clear samples and do paperwork, but you also have to find beats and find artists and find producers and find writers. Hip-hop only liked the creative side. So I was like, boop, I'll do the administrative side. You know what I mean? Because was my way in. And Dame was like, cool, you're going to handle that for hip-hop. And I was like, with pleasure. And that got me in the studio every day.
But what you're saying is so vital as far as business. Like, I don't even know if you fully understand it, because these are things that we speak about. Like, these are things that we speak about in, like, seminars and stuff like that, as far as the find where you can add value, even if you don't necessarily like it.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, you saw the opening where it's like, all right, administrative work is something that he's not interested in. You probably wasn't overly
I'm not saying, like, I didn't want to be. I didn't even know what I was going to do.
But you saw that that's a value
that's
add.
That's a value add.
Another thing, like, so we got a partner that we work with called MG the Mortgage Guy. Shout out to him. And I love his story, because how he approached me, it wasn't like, yo, can I get on? It was like, yo, I got clients for you. How can I add value to me? And he was doing it for months for free and never asked for anything. And then that just led to, like, okay, come on. And now we just developed the relationship. Now we business partners. And that's what you did, as far as even you took step further, even when they turned you down, you still added value for free for months. And then it's only a matter of time before
we gotta get stuff.
And so many people lose that. Like, you could go out and have an MBA from Harvard and not understand those principles, and it's not gonna work out for you. Because most people network from a selfish standpoint. It's like, how can you help me today? What can I do for you?
Exactly. Great point, by the way. And also, I was gonna say, like, I also always try to be self-aware. Again, I don't know if I acknowledge that or realize that back then. Like, I didn't even know what self-aware was right back then. But I mean, like, my mentality has always been that it's like, all right, these guys don't know me, so they're not going to just be like, yeah, fine, come on, cool, you're on. You know what I mean? So you have to look at the things from other people's side. Like, why would they want to hire me? Why would they want to put me on? What's the, just because they saw me around a little bit and, you know, at clubs or at concerts, you know what I'm saying? So I always figure, like, let me try to add my value to the company for free to prove to you that I'm worth a shot. And by the way, I wasn't even looking for a job. Yeah. I was looking for a shot at a job. So it's like, whatever that was going to take. And then once I was in, like I said, I could tell you every transition. I'll give you another example. And this was a good friend of mine, Shaka Pilgrim, one of the most brilliant people.
Shout out to Shaka.
In the business.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Told to her too.
Well, no. So Shaka, there was a time where they was about to go on tour. And remember, I'm an A&R. But I want to go on tour. Like, I want to go on tour. But I have no purpose on tour. Zero. The A&R has no purpose on tour. But all the artists were going. So I A&R'd, you know, I helped with Jay. A&R'd with Bleak. Beanie Sig, all of them were going on tour.
Which tour is it?
Hard Knock Life.
Oh.
Right? So I don't have...
Hard Knock
Life. Yeah, I don't have no means to go. I don't have no reason to go on tour.
Yeah.
And then they were about to hire a videographer. And I remember, I always took photography as a hobby. And we had to work on two albums. So Shaka was like, dang, you're gonna hire this fucking dumbass photographer that y'all don't know instead of just using Lenny? And I didn't, by the way, I didn't even think of that. You know what I'm saying? And I would, but I will, I'll take photos for free. I mean, I'm already an employee, so it's not free. It's like, I'm fine. I'm there. And then also, we had to work on two albums. So we was like, yo, why don't we just work on an album? We get a studio bus and we work on an album on the road. And then he was with it. So we were doing DJ Clue album on the road.
Was Clue,
doing,
was Siegel? And Siegel?
Yeah, it was both. So now I had multiple reasons now to go on tour. So again, I was going to figure out, because I'll tell you what wasn't going to happen. I wasn't going to not be on that tour.
And now you're in the movie.
Yeah. Well, I filmed a lot of
That's what I was going to say. So like, you're the one, obviously, you're, because photography is something that I admire that you do, and we'll get to that later. But it was like, now you found a way to get on tour, value add by shooting it. But now you're, they're actually using your footage to create.
Then that's how the movie. Universe turned over. They got a bunch of professional, you know, shooters, videographers, whatever it is. This is the 90s, bro. I don't even know what a videographer is. I don't even care. But nobody was comfortable with them. Right. And the thing I had with my photos was that I could take a picture of anybody anywhere because everybody kind of knew me or knew of me at the time within the family.
So, comfortable with
so Rough Riders knew me, you know what I'm saying? Red and Meth, they kind of knew me already. So you kind of knew me already. So it was like, oh, that's Lenny. It's all good. It's like, so the same thing with the filming. They were filming and then like Beans and all of them kept like, yo, get that shit out of here. And then it was just like, just let Lenny do it. They're not going to tell Lenny no. Mm. And that's how I got to film everything.
You know who else took the videographer route to get in? Another one of our friends. Jimmy.
Yes.
Jimmy Jones.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
he actually did a lot.
Yeah.
He told us, though.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I used to use him as an example with our guys who were like, you know, guys around like Bleak or around Beanie Siegel, because like Jim would like even be an engineer. And I know that he didn't know how to engineer, but he was like, you know what? I know the basics, and I got an assistant that works at the studio that knows everything. And boom, and that was another bag.
Yeah.
And then it's just like inserting yourself. Like, okay, I could. Same with directing. He was like directing videos.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Again, you got a director of photography. You're literally he's gonna actually film it.
Yeah.
You're just like, get this. This scene, this box, this hot, you know what I'm saying? It's, like,
yeah, because even in the line budget, like if the label has a line budget and you're saying like, I'll take that line, you're the artist, but now you're the director too of the video.
Smart.
It's
super smart.
It's one of these things that add value. And it's like, you know, he's a street guy. I'm sure you saw he didn't know anything about filming a music video, but learn on the fly. He said he was doing that, engineering, security for Cam, anything that Cam needed, that's what he was doing. Now he's walking in Virgil's fashion show.
This is
25
true.
Years later.
This is true.
Guy has a, you know, sometimes you just have to find a way to add value. Mm-hmm. And what you said about the tour is key too, because a lot of people want to travel and they don't add any value. It's like you just cost them money if you're just traveling for no reason.
Just being extra like homie and not I'm saying like, you know, extra.
Not real. You can say that.
Everybody has to, you know, it has to make sense, you know, and it's dope to want to bring everybody and bring your people,
right?
But everybody should have a purpose. And by the way, that's what I love about Rock, is that Rock always like taught that or just kind of implemented that in the minds of like the, you know, the heads of the labels or the main artists. So it's like, yo, make sure everybody's doing it. It don't matter what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They could be this, they could be the barber, they could be, but as long as they're adding value so that they're not just bodies that are just taking up, you know, space and money.
So from an A&R standpoint, what's the, because, I read that It's All Right is the first song that you
kind of... Yeah, first song that A&R.
So what's that like after you've put this song together? It's a huge success. It ended up on, obviously, Volume 2 and then the soundtrack as well. How you, like, I'm like, you feeling like, yo, I'm part of this now? Like, I'm yeah, a little bit?
And again, right, it was like using the resources. You know, G. Roberson, one of the best managers in the game.
Yeah.
Me and G shared a desk at Rock.
So it's like you, G, and Hop?
Me, G, and Hop.
Oh my God.
We shared a desk. And then after a while, you know, Hop was like the guy.
Yeah.
Hop got his own office.
Yeah.
And me and G, just like this, every day. Phone calls, business, every day like this. Every artist that came to see us, they had to see me with G, or G had to see him. So anyway, G. Roberson managed Mahogany, which was the producer of It's All Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like Bleak was already there. Jay was a given. And it was just like, yo, G, the producer, like, bring, you know what I'm saying? Came through and... Jay, Bleak, and Mahogany, It's All Right.
It's all right.
Yeah. That's all the jewels. I blew more money than the trail. Fluels. They don't know you, but they know you too well. I
blew more money than the trail. Shout out to Spreewell.
That was my introduction into A&R.
So what exactly does A&R do, though? Because I still feel like that's one of those titles that people still have heard about, but it's kind of like...
And A&R...
What's your responsibility as an A&R?
Stands for Artist and Repertoire. You basically serve as a liaison. An A&R serves as a liaison between the artists and the label. And they have to, you know, ride out with the production of an album. So the A&R helps the artists complete their album. And that's with anything creative, anything from coming up with, you know, records, from putting, you know, them with, you know, good writers or good producers. Maybe if there's a feature, you guys. And A&R, I mean, good A&Rs, they really go through the whole creative process with the artists, and they're coming up with these things together, or they're just assisting sometimes, just assisting the artists in anything they need. Like, oh man, I think I want to put, you know, whatever, Young Thug on his joint. Mm-hmm. The A&R's job is now to go and get Young Thug and talk to Young Thug's manager and send the record and try to get it done. Because remember, sometimes it's like a pitch. Sometimes it's not, you know, when they're peers, when Gunna's hitting Young Thug, that's family. Easy. That's easy. Yeah, easy. But you know, if maybe this is a new artist on Def Jam and we're trying to get Young Thug, it's like, you know, a lot of times good artists will only work with people that they like or they admire or they, you know, they vibe with. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes when you have to call out to somebody blindly and get a feature, it comes with a pitch and it comes with, you know, proving why it's worth it, a favor. Yeah. So an A&R job is to get the whole album done, but also within the finances that you're given. So if you get $500,000 to make an album, that's what you have to make the album for. That's recording, that's mixing, that's mastering, that's features, that's everything that has to do. If you guys want to travel to Atlanta and stay in Atlanta for a month, it's everything that's coming out of that budget.
So we're not getting for real on the first album.
I mean,
so let's talk about that a little bit. So the music record label would advance an artist.
Yeah,
like advance their budget. $500,000 for the making of an album,
correct.
And then the A&R's job or his team, management, whatever, now they have to use that $500 to get the producers.
Yep. To make a complete album.
Wardrobe.
Not wardrobe. Yeah. That wardrobe would come into marketing budget. Yeah. So you get a marketing budget, you get a recording budget, they're different budgets.
Studio time, engineer, producer.
This is everything features. It takes to make an album. Yeah. So the recording, traveling, features.
Yep.
If I get, you know, whomever, Lil Uzi Vert, and Uzi Vert is like, yo, I want $100,000. That $100,000 is coming from
20% of your budget right now.
That's 20%. So you gotta be smart.
And that better be a big record.
If you go over budget, what happens?
Then you gotta go and you gotta ask for reforecast, which is the worst thing.
Reforecast?
A reforecast would be, you know, I'm at 480 right now, and I know I gotta do three more records, and Hit-Boy did one of them, and, you know, Janae Aiko is on one and she charged me, you know, 50. I'm just making all this up.
Yeah.
And now I know, like, damn, I got an overage of, you know, 162,000. Now I got to go and get that money. I got to go to my, whatever, CEO. I got to go to the financial department, finance department. And now give them reasons why. And I'll be like, but Hit-Boy did this joint. Like, you know what I'm saying? Again, it's all like a pitch because now you're asking for, you know, it's just like a business.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, you open up a restaurant and you already hit your limit, but you don't have bar stools and you don't have alcohol yet.
Right.
Now you got to go back and be like, look, this is where we at. This kind of went over. So you just have to explain why. And then usually, hopefully it gets approved.
So it's that, yeah. Good. And now, so now this makes a lot of sense. Now I'm thinking about the early days. Well, I guess like the early 2000s of Rockefeller, because when you're looking for producers, you got in-house.
Yeah.
And so maybe
that
the price,
was a blessing.
Right. This is like a big blessing because now you got Just, you got Kanye. They're killing everything. Plus, you got the hottest artists at the time. You got Bleak, and you got Siegel, and Kanye's just bubbling. So now, like, those fees aren't going to be as high if you have to go outside the family to do
it. Exactly. And it's always like, right, I mean, making an album where you're going all around to all the hot people, you know, you're going to probably exceed hundreds and hundreds of thousands or even, you know, millions of dollars, right? Because if you're going to Pharrell, you're going to this person and that person, and, you know, and all these numbers are, you know, pretty high. It's always best to try to formulate that album where it's like, okay, like let's say what Hit-Boy does with, you know, Benny the Butcher. It's like, it's so easier to be like, okay, I got, even if you got 500 for this album and the Hit-Boy's doing every track. Mm-hmm. And now obviously he's going to give you probably a good rate because he's doing everything. And it's like a solid. So let's just say he's like, yo, give me 250 for everything, mm-hmm. which is great. Now you're one producer, got 250, you still got 250 left for recording and stuff like, but it's good to like make deals like that. Anybody who had in-house production was amazing because you got a, there was usually like a cap rate, you know what I'm saying? what's his name with with Dipset? There was what
Heat Makers.
Heat Makers or something. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Not
like
that Heat Maker. Heat Makers.
Yeah.
You have you mean real
Heat Maker. Like that's
Hit Maker. You can't say not the real hit. He's a real.
I know. Now he's doing this.
No, I think he was just saying that.
The way it sounds. They both solid.
But it's always better if you can have either in-house production or do deals with people. I would do deals with people where it's like if I see they're doing more than two or three songs, I would just do like a song deal. I'm like, look, we already three songs in.
Yeah.
I know you could probably come up with two more. Let's just do a song deal for 100. And now maybe I'm getting somebody who charges 45 for a track, maybe for like 20, 25 a track because I'm doing a whole bundle. Like, let me just give you 100.
Bundle deal.
You get five. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Are you placing them on different
sound
albums?
Sound enticing. You can.
Yeah.
Like, it's happened. Let's say I bought five tracks from this producer for whatever, Bean Siegel, but he only used three. I can shift that over to another artist. And
so let me ask you this: as far as the budget thing, what happens if it goes under budget? You get to keep that money.
Yeah, you get to keep that money.
Keep that money.
Yeah. It's all in advance either way. You gotta pay it back.
So
or you can let the record company keep it and not pay it back. So if I get 500, I only spend four. You could take the four home if you want. You're still gonna have to recoup it, or you can just say keep that, and now you only have to recoup four instead of recouping five.
So,
because everything has to be paid back.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let's get into that. So, all right, when the record label gives you a budget for the marketing budget, the music budget, let's say it's $1 million budget, $500,000 for marketing, $500,000 for music. Now you're $1 million technically like in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes against your record sales, right?
So correct.
The first $1 million that you see.
It'll get recouped.
That goes back.
Back to the record company.
Or even now, 360, before. Anything. Like
yeah.
The first $1 million that you make from everything goes back.
Whatever your deal is, the number, the amount, whatever deal is made for you to spend, that money has to be recouped before you can start making
anything. Yeah.
Correct.
And that's why artists always, a lot of times, end up in the red. Because they might not even make enough to even pay back the record.
Unfortunately, correct. Yeah. And people spend a lot. And, you know, when you're spending and it's kind of like an imaginary budget, you know it's different, right? When you're spending, you ever go to a restaurant or like one of those food courts where there's one in Philly, I think, and you could go to any station you want and just keep.
Yeah.
You'll tend to do that more because it's like even when you're ordering in the restaurant, you'll tend to do that more because you're not actually paying one by one. And then when you're at the end, you're like, jeez, damn, went a little hard. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But when you're paying for stuff, you're more conscious of like, all right, I just came out three different times. One was $78, one was $62, and one was you know what I'm saying? Like you're just more conscious. So when you're working on an album, the money's coming from your
pocket, even though it is coming technically, but you're not looking.
But you're looking like
you haven't seen it.
Somebody else's money.
So that's why artists have a tendency to just spend, because it's like it's coming from there.
Somebody
it's coming from
money.
This imaginary record company budget that.
Yeah.
And even when you run out, you're like, come on, let me get more. I know there's more there. Yeah. This is a multi-billion-dollar company.
And in mine, it's like I haven't made any money. Well, you haven't made enough money to make money. Is the real thing.
Yeah.
You made. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But like I said, once that money is recouped, then you start making the money on top of it. After that,
yeah.
So album comes out, sells whatever. It makes $300,000 or $400,000 for the label. You still have maybe $600 more to recoup, and as it sells, and once you're recouped, and then you start making royalties.
So that Jadakiss, why is the record company's designed to keep the artists in debt?
Yeah,
got a bunch of questions on that.
Yeah, a lot of questions still aren't answered.
Yeah,
and a lot of times I feel artists, again, it's all each his own, but they take more money than they probably need. You know what I'm saying? Whereas like some artists don't. They only want what they need, or they only want what they what they're gonna use. So again, but sometimes people also feel like, hey, it's almost probably gonna be impossible to recoup this, so I'd rather take as much up front as I can.
You know what I mean? And it's psychologically, you're never gonna treat other people's money like your money. Like if it's everything we do is out of our pocket. So like somebody asks, like, what's the budget for that? Like we travel all the time, but it's like our budget is we got to make enough money to pay the Amex bill.
Hello.
It's like, but if it's somebody else, then it's
of
like,
if my heart is paying, you're like, what?
Exactly.
Run it.
Exactly.
Run it.
Exactly. Exactly. Even though it's gonna come back to your money,
right, you don't,
especially if you're young
and
uneducated on it, you're just like, whatever. Run it up.
Yeah. One of the things, back to the A&R thing, is that obviously you had an artist development, but you were also doing video treatments too. Is that so, like, obviously from the standpoint of you were studying photography, you had started filming?
No, I didn't do treatments, but I made sure that, so I wanted to educate myself on every part of the business. And what I thought would be the best way was to be a part of it all. So again, I obviously attached myself to Jay.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to be with him in the studio. So, you know, those studio hours are long, you know what I mean? So we got to develop a really great relationship, all of us that were in there, whoever at the time, right? So now Jay's like, okay, I got to leave to go to this, do this radio interview at Flex. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go. You know what I'm saying? Now I could develop my relationship with Flex. Now I could develop, even though I don't do radio,
yeah,
why wouldn't I want to know Flex, or why wouldn't I want to know, you know, DJ, whomever the person was, right? Yeah. Same thing, now he's going to do a video. Well, I want to be on the video set. Like, I want to see how this works. I want to see, and I will fuck with the video production person, who, and the video commissioner who actually puts the whole video together, which at the time was like Margo Wainwright at Def Jam. Mm-hmm. So stay close to Margo, learn how to work the budgets, learn how to work, you know what I'm saying? How do you hire, Hype Williams? Like, how do you hire these people to do it? Yeah. What's that process? So I just made sure that I was at everything that was going on, and I learned retail, I learned radio, I learned, even if I wasn't going to do it, I wanted...
Just to know,
and yeah, the fact that, like, maybe one day I'll run a record company. As I got into the business, I never wanted to do it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to learn every aspect so that I know what was going on.
Yeah, I would, because that would be my next thing. Like, you're learning all these things.
Yeah.
But that you just said, like, you didn't want to run your own company. But I know, like, G and Hop, yeah, they created their own company.
They were smart early.
So Hip Hop Since 1978 was,
yep,
theirs.
Yep.
Did you ever say, like, let me maybe create my own management after you saw the success of the guys you literally sat across the table from?
I'm going to be honest with you. And that's why I love those guys, and they were smart, and they did, you know, what they were supposed to. I always, and please don't take this the wrong way. I mean, it's in the bet. Those guys were geniuses. Anybody who goes and creates a company and signs artists are genius. Mm-hmm. I chose my freedom over having a company, having artists, having all of that stuff. You know, it comes with work. It comes with, you're responsible for these people's lives. They were responsible for Kanye West's life, Just Blaze's life. You know what I mean? When you have somebody signed to your company, you know, you go hard for them, and we went hard. And Jay was enough for me. Just being involved with Jay and I didn't manage him. I just worked with him, and I was close to him, and I knew that he was going to be the biggest. So that, to me, was enough. Mm. I didn't need to run a company and take up, you know, even more of my time. I wanted my freedom to be able to, and to this day, I do what I want, when I want.
In the words of Beating 2, I ain't the captain on the yacht, but I'm on the boat.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what I prefer. At the drop of a dime, I could go to London tomorrow and do it. And again, not saying that you can't when you have, but if you have a bunch of clients, a company, there's staff meetings you have to go to every week, sometimes 3 and 4, and there's a marketing meeting, and then there's a budget meeting, and then there's a release date meeting, and then you have to be involved in all the aspects, the geniuses of the world, the Kevin Lyles, the Leo Cohens, the Jay Browns, that's big responsibility. It comes with big money, too.
Yeah.
I just want to be able to do what I want, when I want.
Yeah, and they always got to be in constant pursuit.
Right? As long as I take care of my job.
Yeah.
So being at Rockefeller at the beginning stages, Volume 2 comes out and everything changes. And it was so crazy. I think I was in 7th grade when Volume 2 came out.
Nah.
Yeah, I was in 7th grade.
You said
Yeah,
8th grade maybe.
8 for 7. Hey,
yeah, that's crazy.
I was in junior high school. So I remember when that record came out, because I was a Jay-Z fan before that. On the first album. I wasn't.
Mike, check that. Check the facts.
I wasn't a Jay-Z.
He's a Nas guy, but
I can't be a Nas.
Nah, me and Lenny on this side of the table. We on this side.
You know what's so crazy?
That's cool.
I'm such a diehard Nas fan.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
He switches sides all the time.
No, I love Nas.
He was a Nas fan, and then
that's my favorite album of all time. No matter.
Takeover came out.
Yes.
And he played it for me over, because I was in prep school. I used to play ball. I was in prep school in Massachusetts. He played it for me over the phone.
Yeah.
I think it might have been before I went to Massachusetts. I was home. He called.
You wasn't here.
I was home.
Okay.
You played Takeover to me over the phone. He's like, "Listen, your man's done."
Never said that.
You said your man is done.
Never said that.
You said your man is done.
Never said that. We're not gonna put that on camera.
You said
never in my life said Nas was done.
You said your man's done.
Never.
He played me the whole song, and I'm listening to it on the phone. I said, whack, bro.
You did say that. Now, you did say that.
That's
no,
not
no, 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 you did say that. I promise you, you did say that. Yo, this shit whack. I was like, yo, you bug. This shit ain't whack. I never said he was done.
You don't think it was.
It was based off of loyalty.
Yeah, but you know, in this business, we can't be biased. Like,
no, no, that's a fact.
That's like me saying Ethan's whack. Ethan's not whack.
That's a fact.
I hated it. You know what I'm saying?
What that felt like, though, at that time? Because, like, let's just talk about it, right? Like, you die hard, and you know this record is heating up New York. Angie's trying to deny it. Fat Joe's like, you can't deny this. Like, what's happening in the building? Like, is the room shaking? Like, are we just walking around? Like, now we going to get him.
I speak personally because I don't like to speak for other people. No, for real. Personally, I was like, I was fucked up by it.
No, you got it. Don't leave me there. Okay, that's all.
That's real. Like you said, right? The same passion that made him say Takeover was whack. You know, was the same passion that, again, I'm not like, you know, I understood what Ether was. I didn't like it. I didn't like what it was.
Yeah.
The record was a great record. It was an amazing record. Mm. I didn't like what it was and who it was going towards. So same thing. My passion and my loyalty was like, and you know, at the time you listen to the radio, you know, it was all like, oh, Jay's done. Jay's done. You know how people like, you know what I'm saying? They immediately forget everything.
Yeah.
And by the way, but anyway, so being in your city, with the guy you think is the savior of everything, mm-hmm. the best guy, best artist in the world, and hearing the people change and hearing the people switch sides and hearing the people discredit Jay or whatever it was that, you know, was going on the radio and this, I was tight. Mm. I was like, you know, the author meme was fist.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever that is, that was me in the city, just like cringing.
I was hurt.
But it happens, right? It goes, that's when I was on.
It was necessary, and, it was good for hip hop.
It was.
And that's when I realized like how human, how real, and how like selfless Jay was, right? It was like two ways at the time.
Yeah.
The two way.
Motorola,
like, two ways. Angry. Okay. Like no. I was like just angry, like some bullshit. People in New York are tripping, like, you know, like, cause it was like I said, everybody was turning. And
that's a fact.
Say it's a dope record, say it was crazy, say, oh, he got him back, whatever. Don't say Jay's done or Jay's dead or, you know what I'm saying? Even what you doing that, you know, you could be like, okay, it's good, but he's not done, you know what I'm saying? Like, anyway, that was I was passionate, I was heated, and I almost had like watery eye, like from being angry, not like.
Yeah.
And Jay, I wrote this 2A and sent it to them. I think I sent it to a group of like a few of us. And he hit me, he called me. This guy who's going, you know, whatever he's going through, and Jay's super calm and collective. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I'm saying still, you got to think again, right? You got to be self-aware. You can't be selfish. This is his moment to figure out, or his moment to whatever. You can't be putting your shit on. Imagine what he's going through. Imagine what the person's going through.
Mm-hmm.
And here this guy goes calling me, like calming me down. You know what I mean? Like, yo, don't stress. Like, we good. This is part of the journey.
Yeah,
this is like he's calming me down on something that he's going through.
That's leadership.
That's leadership. Yeah, and leadership. That to me was just like, man, I'll never leave this man's side.
Yeah, we got stronger after Ethan.
Ever.
And then, shout out to Jay.
Yeah, yeah. Jay, that's a powerful
Jay's
moment.
Jay's ability.
Powerful moment.
So all right.
Jay signed us. Let's go with my guy.
I declare, well, I said like one of the biggest moments in hip hop was when I saw those two on stage, just because of what they meant to me personally, both of us. We were both there.
Loved it.
And I wasn't there.
You wasn't there?
Nah.
Loved it. I bought like New York and Philly.
I bought like 13 tickets to the show. Like, it was crazy. So like to see him come, because it was like.
You thought he was going to diss
Nas. I thought he was going to diss Nas again, because it was like, I declare war on the industry. It was like anybody who had an issue, and it kind of wasn't that. It was kind of like a uniformity thing. And Puff came out. I remember him being drunk on stage, and I was like, "I'm just happy to witness this." Because we had grown up, we saw exactly. We didn't see Pac and Big have reconciliation.
And I wanted that so bad.
Yeah,
like behind the scenes, I wanted, there's something that I hoped for, or something that, you know, came up here and there. Like, and it was just like, when the time is right, it'll.
I knew it was gonna happen when Kanye put Nas on a record.
That was a sign.
We
made it because it came right after. Diamonds Are Forever remix on the album.
That was a big moment. But let me ask you, all right, Volume 2 comes out and everything changes and Jay-Z becomes a global superstar. It sells, I think, like 5 million records.
Yep.
What's that song with Annie?
Hard Knock Life. Damn, don't try to do that. Nah. What's that song?
Nah. It just slipped my mind.
Important song.
That's a legend.
One of the biggest records, in, not even in hip hop, in music.
Nah, that song is legend.
What's that song?
That song is legend. But like, so everything changed.
Anthrax? What?
Yo. Is that a little Alex Cat again?
Yeah, everything changed.
Drillmatic?
Yeah. Drillmatic.
One of the best albums ever made. Illmatic.
Nah. Shout out to that Volume 2. That Volume 2 is classic.
Yeah, definitely.
But everything changed.
Yes.
And Rockefeller, it was never the same. So what was it like for you being in a building, and how did the business start to change? Because I'm assuming, like, you know, that's when the business really started to take off. So you had an inside, like, you know, viewpoint. How did that change as far as like scaling up very quickly?
It changed because, like you said, right? It made the world see the global icon that we knew Jay was, right? Because you know, you have something, you know how good it is. You're just waiting for the rest of the world to catch up, and that's what that was for us. You know, I mean, again, whoever was with him, they knew. Me joining the team, 95, I knew. You know what I'm saying? Through Reasonable Doubt, through Volume 1, through, I knew it's just like, when is everybody else going to know? And Annie, I guess, you know, was the record that broke, obviously, public knowledge. But, you know, for us, it was like I said, even on my front, on a personal front, you know, my mom stopped giving me applications to get a job because she thought it was, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, my family thought music was like,
they never believed it,
but you know what I mean? It's just not,
they didn't believe in it.
It's not a real thing that people look at it like, you know, unless you saw, they went through Motown and all that. They looking at this like, what is this? So that made it real. I mean, having a hit record, a global hit record, made it like real, made Jay-Z, for lack of a better word, a real thing for the outside world, for the people who were outside of us, who we were waiting to catch up. Like, we're waiting for y'all to catch up to see what he is and what he can do. And this is just an inkling of what he has. So that changed a lot, you know what I mean? And even with business, I just feel like how they move forward and how they did their deals and how they were already businessmen, in a sense. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They were already making money prior to. They were already, you know, buying things, assets, and they had cars. And you know what I'm saying? So it was just like, the business was catching up to them. You know what I mean? I don't feel like, I mean, obviously everybody learns as they go for certain things, but I feel like those guys were super smart and they just, you know, it's like, okay, now they get it. Now we can activate all these things that we wanted to, you know what I'm saying?
So, I mean, and this is the toughest part, and it breaks our heart, because after, obviously, Blueprint goes crazy in 2000, and then he has Fade to Black in 2004, and we think, like, this is it, he's gonna retire. Turmoil happens at Rockefeller, breakup.
Wait, Rockefeller, they broke up?
Well.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It hurt. Things so happen. You're in this situation now. You're part of this building. Like, what is it like now that, you know, we have Dame kind of here with the Dipset movement, and we have State Property, well, still with State Property too, but and Jay's still, like, the biggest artist there and kind of still doing his own thing before, I guess, Kingdom Come comes.
Was he the biggest artist there?
Yeah.
We didn't talk about Kanye West.
No, he's still bigger than Kanye at the time. 2004, yeah. Because Fade to Black is 2004.
Yeah, Kanye was getting
huge.
He was
getting there.
But still
he had to buy two tickets.
Still was Jay-Z.
Like, no, let's not forget.
Still was Jay.
Carlene told me I could buy two tickets.
No, Kanye was growing. It was.
When did Kanye become the biggest? Jesus Walks?
No, that's still 2004. So I would probably say
second album?
I think Graduation. He becomes.
By Graduation, he was already out of it.
I think that's when he becomes. Because
I think the second.
It happens. What happens is.
Late Registration.
Not yet. I think the Kingdom Come Graduation thing, and then Jay standing next to him against 50, and that, now he's out of here. Now it's Kanye out of here. Lenny, you may not have, I don't know. What's your take?
No. I mean, the timeline will always be a little like, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, they were both huge. But at that time, I think everybody was already like, you know, moving in their own purpose and moving with who they were, like, moving with. You know what I'm saying? Like, those things have kind of been established. It wasn't like, you know, I know some people think like there's, like, some, like, breakup and then in the room and people like, you going this side. You're going with mom. You're going with dad. This was years in, you know what I'm saying, from an amazing company that they built together that, you know, and birthed so many superstars from the staff. You know what I'm saying?
Natural.
So again, it was just, at that time, you rocked with who you rocked with. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, Dame gave us some advice to, like, not break our thing up. What did you learn from that? Like, seeing that whole situation play out, that maybe looking back on it, you could give advice on, like, you know what I mean?
That's hard to answer only because, you know, like, it's home and it's like people go through what they go through. And you don't
like a divorce.
Even me, I don't probably even know all of the reasons. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I really don't. Yes, I was on the inside and yes, I was there, but like I also kept my head down. I also, you know what I'm saying? I was reserved. I was also, you know, I just kept my head down and I didn't involve myself in things that weren't my, you know, per se business or, so again, I don't know what everything is or why, you know what I'm saying? But yeah. I wrote it out as a team player and I always gave 100% and I always give all three of them credit, you know what I'm saying? Like they all helped make me who I am today. All of them individually, Dame individually was like, yes, okay, you could do this A&R shit. And Biggs supported me. And Jay always he just let me rock.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like Jay just letting me rock and do whatever. It was like, I'm not never going to take, you know, advantage of this. I'm not never going to take it for granted. You know what I'm saying? And I just proved
transition
myself.
Was smooth because then you have Rock
Nation. I was going right there with
mm-hmm.
it, yep.
And then in Rock Nation, well, what point did you become a manager? Because I do want to talk about you being a manager.
After Def Jam. So Rockefeller, Jay retires, whatever. He comes back. When he retires, I leave to go to Virgin Records for a year. I didn't want to work anywhere else, but Jay really, really wasn't doing anything. Like, really. This, he wasn't.
So to
the retirement.
Fade to black.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, after that, he wasn't doing it. Like, he really... I'm done.
Yeah.
And there was no work. There was no label. There was no,
nothing to
do. You know what I'm saying? But I was still on his, like, his staff. And I was just like, Jay, I'm getting these offers at all these labels. It's like, yo, Linnea's come. Mm-hmm. And Jay's like, no, we're good. Just stay here. And I'm like, yeah, but we're not.
We're not doing anything.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't mean it like that. I meant I don't even want to take your money. He was paying me as a staff.
Yeah.
I didn't even want to take your money if we're not. And he was like, you're good. Like, we're good. You know what I'm saying? He's a real one, right?
Yeah.
And then one of my mentors, which is one of his really, really great friends, is Big John Platt. One of the biggest publishers.
He's on the list.
He's the biggest.
Watched his Rap Radar, and I was like,
he's the biggest.
No, we got to talk to this guy.
John was doing some stuff at Virgin Records and wanted me to come help out as an A&R. And then he could go to Jay directly and be like, yo, Lenny, whoop. And then Jay was like, I bet. That's family. Go ahead. So did that for like a year. And then after that, Jay took the job at Def Jam. And then I got summoned over to Def Jam.
That's how you became a manager?
No, still A&R. Did that for the whole time Jay was there. So, you know, got to work with different artists, Neo and Dream and Rosé and just everybody. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't.
She's a part of that.
She's a part of it. I wasn't part of, like, you know.
A project.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, she was in. Yeah. And then when Jay left Def Jam, that's when he went to go start Rock Nation.
Right.
But when he left, you know, obviously the whole team was going. So Tata, Jay Brown, just all of us. And L.A. Reid asked Jay if he could leave one person behind. Could he leave me behind? Because we had so many projects there. So he's like, why you guys go get that started? Mm-hmm. Can you just leave Lenny here to still work here for a little while so that, you know, because we had Jay. We had a bunch of people that were signed kind of like either through us or were like our fam or we were like helping out on projects.
Yeah.
And to not leave them, you know what I'm saying? To not leave it like
this is the Ross Jeezy era.
Yes.
So
and I love that because I got to stay not under, like, you know, the Rock.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Shot, you know what I'm saying? And while they were starting that, and I got to work with all those artists.
And that's when you was managing.
The management started right after that. The management started with Khaled, Fabulous, and Khaled.
And that's with Rock Nation.
Yes.
So all right, let's talk about that. So managing your first client being DJ Khaled. That's a good client.
Fab first.
Well, that's another good client to have. So you had Fab first. What's the role of a manager? This is another thing, kind of like an A&R.
Yeah.
Manager.
Good question.
What is the role of a manager? Because we always hear managers, manager, my manager. So
call my manager.
We have a manager. Shout out to Abdullah.
Yogi, what up? We're trying to get
this very responsive.
What's your role of a manager
is to help create, situate, maintain, you know, every aspect of your career, right? That's from, you know, revenue to, you know, brand deals to the right, you know, PR looks to helping build your brand to any and everything that has to do with your career and helping it elevate and evolve and become successful. You know, and it's a full-time job and there's, you know, you're dealing with the artist, and that doesn't come with just the artist, right? It comes with the artist family. It comes with the artist friends. It comes with the artist entree. It comes with everything. And it's like, you know, it's a real time consuming, you know, but if you're passionate about your client and you're passionate about what you guys have, it never really feels like work. Every job gets stressful here and there, but I mean, I just love being able to control, you know, the destiny together.
Yeah.
I love, you know, being with a client or being with an artist or being with whatever, whomever you manage, and being able to sit down, put those plays together, put a plan together, and execute them. You know what I'm saying? In any kind of different way. Oh, we want to deal with these five companies. Boom, let's try to reach out. And maybe we just get three of them. But still, it's like, we didn't have any of them at all. Let's try to put this tour together with these artists. That would be amazing. Going out and reaching out to the people and getting them and getting the money and getting the funds and getting the, like, being able to do these things from scratch, for me, is like so fulfilling. So how I got into management was, I was still an A&R at the time. But like I told you from the beginning, I was so heavily involved with everything that was going on with an artist. So if I A&R'd an artist, I didn't think that was enough, right? Because yeah, we do an album, but I don't, my life or my job with you doesn't stop when we leave the studio. Mm-hmm. Nah, I want to make sure your video is crazy. So I'm gonna check out the treatment. I want to make sure your touring is crazy. I heard whomever's, you know, T.I.'s going on tour. I'm gonna get you on that tour. So I was doing all of these managerial duties without realizing it.
That you, okay, was being
you was the manager. Manager.
And that's how it happened with Fab. It was just like, you already did this, this, that, and that. You know what I mean? Those are like five things a manager would do. Mm-hmm. And you just, my hand, like, why don't you just manage me? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's how, because at first, which I love to tell people, to inspire them to not be scared, right? To not be scared, to take a chance and not be, I was scared a lot of the time and, you know, fearful of failure. I just don't want to fail. And I would turn things down because I can't manage you. I'm not a manager. I didn't go to business school. I can't be your, you know what I'm saying? I can't tell you about business. I didn't go to, but again, you know, fortunately in our culture, we get to learn things, right? Hands-on. How many people we see shooting videos and shooting movies that didn't go to film school, mm-hmm. that didn't go, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's like with everything, and we always figure it out. So that's how I made the transition into management. It was like, I'm already doing Shaka Pilgrim again, and some of my peers like, what? Like, you already, you're doing it now, like beyond. You're doing more than they're, not him, but I'm saying to some other people, like, you're doing more than their manager's doing. But I didn't look at it like that. I looked at it as like, I want to win. I never looked at all the things I did for the artists I work with as like, yeah, I'm manager. I'm done. No, I looked at it like, we got to win. I put Fab on a Jay-Z tour one time because it was like, Jay's going out. He needed a little, you know, he wanted a little support. And it was like him, Fab, and Sierra. And it was like, yo, Fab. And I hooked it up and I spoke to Jay and Jay was like, cool. Like, I want my artists to win. So I want them to be on the best tour. I want them to be in the best brand deals, the best, like everything, you know, at the best.
Very selfless of you.
Nah, it's a very,
very selfless. Yeah.
You take a percent, managers get a percentage.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the percentage?
The percentage can be anything that you negotiate. It's anything from 5% to 20-25%. It's just, that's all on you and what you negotiate with your client. You know, sometimes people come and they have two managers, maybe they split it 10-10, or sometimes people come in.
They have a road manager.
And they have a road manager. But a road manager is just, that's more like a, it's more like it's a position. They're all positions, but a manager would get 20% of a deal. Like a role manager may not necessarily get 20% of a show. They can if that's what they work out with the artist, but they could just be paid as an employee, you know, weekly or biweekly for that service.
And what is a role? What is a role manager?
A role manager is essentially everything that a manager does, but only for traveling purposes.
Okay.
So my role manager makes sure that, you know, itinerary's in place, that we have the hotels locked in, maybe advancing and getting there first and making sure our keys is right, or just setting up everything on the road, literally.
Are
we going to this restaurant, making sure, maybe sending security over to get a little, you know, to advance and make sure it's good. And just, they manage the things on the road. So you necessarily wouldn't get a percentage from that. Some do. Mm-hmm. Some role managers also book shows. So it's like, I'm booking your show in North Carolina, and I'm taking you and making sure you're good as your role manager, and they may collect off of that booking.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So at his PE, so you had Fab and you had Khaled. These are early on. Did you try to take on more clients, or did you realize, let me just focus on these two? And then I guess the other part is that since you're so entrenched and you're taking on so many tasks, what role did it have on your personal life, right? Because this sounds like it's super time.
I never took on a lot of clients because I didn't want, you know, Khaled and Fab alone were enough, you know, that occupied most of my time, and mm-hmm. I always got a lot of offers. I always got a lot of new people coming at me, like, I want you to manage me. You know, big artists, artists that are, you know, signed and doing well, or new artists that have super potential. But I don't want to take anybody on and not be able to be there for them like I would want to. So I turned down a lot of stuff. I helped make some management plays happen, where it's like, maybe I can't do it, but then I still, you know, suggest them or bring them into Roc Nation. And because we have a whole team of, you know, 15, 20 managers or whatever, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So I could be like, hey, you know, Moneybagg Yo is looking for management. We'll bring him in. We'll start it, get it going. Yeah. And then he'll go, and then like Mike Brinkley will take it over, or Mike Brinkley will, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I've done that sometimes too. Like, necessarily I can't take it on for myself, yeah. but I could bring it on to the company and make sure that they're situated, and then we can move forward.
That's very important, especially in our situation. I never really realized the importance of a manager until we actually got one.
Yeah.
And so much stuff from, you know, answering emails and working out deals and booking hotels and make sure the car service is there. So much stuff that you don't fully realize. And then especially as you start to scale.
It takes a load off of you. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we're there for.
So when you said the Roc Nation thing, I'm like, all right, that makes a lot of sense now. Because I always hear people getting signed to Roc Nation.
Yeah. So Roc Nation is a full entertainment company. Yeah. Publishing, label, management, streaming service, sports agency, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Spirit.
A lot of people are on the management side.
On the management side. Yeah. So when you see, like, we saw Griselda go up there, and we saw Meg Thee Stallion.
Big Sean. Meg, Meek.
Fat Joe.
Khaled, Joe. I mean, so many. Kiss.
I think Jim Jones is on Roc
Nation. Yeah, he is too. Yeah.
Let me ask you,
Meek,
before we wrap, we can't leave without talking about one of the biggest people that's ever come through the Rockefeller system, Kanye West.
Mm-hmm.
So Kanye, when you was there, obviously when he first came through, you said you saw Jay. You knew Jay was gonna be the biggest. Did you know Kanye was gonna be the biggest? Like, what was your impression?
He was always dope. There was no doubt. I mean, even obviously from his tracks and from what he was doing, even before rap, it was no doubt, like, this guy was a prodigy. He was, you know, special. You can't make stuff like he was making, and making those tracks and coming up with those hooks and coming up and not think that he wasn't going to be special. But I wasn't involved in all of that. Like, I mean, people are watching the doc now.
Yeah, I haven't seen you yet.
But yeah, but I mean, like,
it's coming.
Yeah, but I wasn't. Yeah, I always stuck with Jay, and I kept low.
Say that.
So I didn't, and it had nothing to do with nobody else. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so that's why even in the doc, you don't see me around. I wasn't.
Stay close to Jay.
Wherever Jay was at.
Not a bad decision to make.
No, for everything. I don't care if he had an interview at XXL. Like, I was there. I'd be waiting in the car a lot of times. He's going to meetings, and I'll wait in the car just to, you know what I'm saying? Just like hold, like a driver, like almost. Like, it didn't matter, whatever.
Whatever role.
But yeah, man. And like I said, that's how we developed, you know, a really great and amazing relationship. And, you know, at the same time, I was shooting. So, you know, and I looked at Jay like how back in the day, how I would look at photos and look at, like, you know, a Marvin Gaye photo in front of, you know, Motown, or how I would look at a Sam Cooke photo with Malcolm X. And you know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I looked at Jay. I was like, damn, I'm taking these pictures everywhere he goes. This shit, maybe 20 years, might be crazy. Like, this is Jay talking to DMX, or this is Jay, you know, talking to Dr. Dre about something, and I'm just capturing these things. So that's how I looked at it. So
you have a time capsule of history. So I know you were talking, I mean, there was maybe a book coming.
Yeah.
Is that still in the works? Or
still in the works.
We are going to get the
still
book.
Still in the works, yeah.
Photo album?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a coffee table book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, a collective of my behind the scenes photos of the last
year. Because everybody takes your pictures.
Yeah.
I got to figure out who Ain't No Jigga is.
I was gonna ask him that off camera.
It's not none of us, but it's, yeah.
That, everybody says the same thing. Everybody says the same
really
thing.
Really not.
Yeah.
I speak to them. Like,
You spoke?
They're out of the country. Yeah, I mean, we speak on DM.
Ain't No Jigga?
Yeah.
Everybody said, like, yo, he gotta
facts,
be
like,
he gotta be somebody that
he or she
connected
or she.
Heavily connected or she. To the situation.
Yeah, but no, it's a real person. It's not none of us, it's not staff, it's not
Jay-Z.
By the way, I'm Kodak Lens. I want all my shit.
Kodak Lens.
You
perfect name, Kodak Lens.
Yeah. But
Ain't No Jigga's dope.
There's been a couple of brands who sent us some spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Puff and the Ciroc team. Shout out to Rosé and the good folks at Bel Air.
Mm.
We've never been sent any Douce.
Really? I'll get it.
I sent Douce. Puff's is just
De Leon. That's De Leon.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
This man is kind of crazy. Yo, Shadi, what you
wild.
Bro, we're trying to get the Douce.
Nah, so you purposely say wild things. No, because that's like a third, fourth one. No, let me know.
I'm trying to get us
so
to
you the you with Deleon.
Nah, boy, jet lag. This guy back.
By the way, even when he started, he was like Puff, and I'm like, why would Puff send do something? Not like that, but
yeah,
like,
yeah, nah.
I don't
even know. Black man.
so you he does this?
Yeah, yeah, I got it.
Well, so I remember you always saying wild shit.
Nah. Thank my point.
I'm trying to get us to the Duce party. You doing this.
Guys, so he thinks that Duce is Deleon, just so you guys know.
Let me start with a D, man.
Let's start with a D.
Pause.
Yo,
so
Sam, boy.
I mean, I've always seen
what
you.
What a life.
I've seen you with the brand.
And it's
kind of one of those things. I'm like, what is Lenny do with Duce? Like, are you the...
So I'm a brand ambassador for a bunch of brands. Yeah.
So that's one of them.
Most recently, Lobos, which is LeBron James.
I saw that.
So I'm brand ambassador for them. Duce always. That's just for life. That's just, I'm a dark drinker. And it's my man's, my brother's cognac. Why wouldn't I? You know what I'm saying? So that's just a family thing. That's not like, oh, I am an ambassador.
Just by
association.
Association.
You know what I'm saying? And I really believe in our stuff. I really believe in our...
We actually just missed him. We were at Native America, and we was in the Duce Lounge.
Puff or Jay?
You.
Oh. You. No, you.
We have a mutual friend. So actually, she was trying to connect us.
And who's that?
Esmeralda?
Oh, yeah. Just
Yeah. So she was trying to connect us, and we had left. And she's like, where y'all at? I'm like, we just left. She's like, oh, I just came in with Lenny.
She's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're supposed to meet Shaka at Made in America. She ended up not showing up, but it's all
right.
She's
the one that got us the tickets, right?
Shaka's...
Yeah. Hi, Lindsay.
Shaka. She's the best person who's like a mystery and like...
We spoke, though, for like a good hour, so I was like, all right, this is positive.
Sherry Bryant.
Shout out to Sherry.
Sherry's a legend.
Yeah.
Folks over at Rockford. She started with us at 15.
Yeah.
And she's the president now.
Yes.
She's a big fan of...
The seat's been waiting for her. For 2 years. He said, whenever she's ready,
she'll only come when she can promote her clothing, her brand.
I support my wife.
Of course.
Nah.
We can't leave. We can't leave just because I see the hat.
Oh, yeah.
I see the hat. And I know.
You guys are talking about financial literacy. And
we have to. Yeah. And I know, obviously, the last memory we have of him is the Hire video.
Yeah.
And I know you were there.
Yeah.
He's at the video?
Shout
out to Steve-O.
The picture you took of him in the blue satin, I actually posted that on March 31st.
Oh, shit.
When it happened. Obviously,
greatest image I've ever captured.
We had a good conversation about that with Steve-O.
Yeah. Your relationship, your thoughts on, obviously, this brilliant, brilliant man that is on.
Brilliant guy who just was ahead of his time, who, you know, what you guys are doing and what you guys are teaching, imagine him having that foresight and having that mind state from...
Off the rip.
A youngster from the team, you know what I'm saying? And him and his whole team. And that whole team is just incredible, man. And the way they've been carrying on the legacy has been amazing. They're working on a whole bunch of really dope stuff. The Puma, obviously, capsule stuff, you know, what Lauren does, just everything. Like, the whole team is, you know, that relationship came through. We all knew him individually, but it really came through Emery. Emery developed a really amazing relationship with him. And that's how we all got tighter with him. And, I mean, that guy, man. Was the best. He was the best because I also like, he did little things that Jay would do. Where it's like, you know, and for me, for somebody who loves photography, you know, there's times where, you know, Jay might be somewhere and Nip would do this often and like actually see what I'm seeing and then kind of pressure me or ask me like to catch it. You know what I mean? So that day with the car, you know what I'm saying? We on the side, we on the brake and the blue car is there. And you know they're switching film or whatever, and I'm looking at it. And I look at him, and I'm in my head. I'm literally like, "Damn, I should catch him on this." You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I'm like, he had just got there. I didn't want to like you know bother him too quick. And he looked at me. He was like, "Are you want that shit, nigga?" And I was like, like he knew what I was. I was like, right? And he was like, "Come on, nigga, let's get it." You know what I'm saying? And he went up against that car, and I swear I took like three or four. Usually, if they let me keep going, I'm gonna keep going. But I took three or four. And he was like, you got it? And I was like, nigga, I got it. And he was like, you want to take some more? And I was like, Nip, I got it. Like, I saw it right away. I only took like 3-4 pictures.
Yeah.
And but again, just that thing, that interaction, he would always do it, man. Him and Lauren were my favorite to also catch together. You know what I'm saying? Like, I see them out and about, and he'd be like, come on, I know you want to get this. You know what I'm saying? I love capturing them, man.
You know, just listening to you talk, man, just the humility, right? Like. It's just like, yo, I'm a fan of this too. Like, yeah, I am who I am. I'm doing what I'm doing, but like, I'm still a fan of this.
I'm a fan first.
That's dope, man.
a fan first. So the fact that these people even let me, allowed me to have this kind of like, you know what I'm saying, relationship with them, and they allowed me to be in their lives, and they, and more than anything, like, they trust me, you know what I'm saying? And I'll never violate that trust, man. I'm 25 years in. I ain't never have no weird shit going, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I'll never violate that trust.
Appreciate it, brother. Definitely enjoyable conversation. Glad we got a chance to do it.
Thank you for stopping by.
Anything, any last words for the people that you would like to let the people know? Anything?
Did Derek Jeter play for the Mets, or is that something you were?
Like, listen, if when the Halloween party comes,
done.
We need two invites.
Done.
Just forgive everything he's done today.
Done. Go out and get Jay-Z's Deli on and get Puff's Buffet, guys.
Owned by black men. That's a fact.
All right, we got one more thing.
Yeah.
The gold couch.
Gold couch. My office.
At some point.
I'm begging you guys to
please.
Come.
Oh, can we please?
I'm begging
please.
You.
Please.
The whole purpose of it is to capture the people that I admire, the people that I respect, the people that I look up to. I need Earn Your Leisure on the couch.
Oh, my
you guys
gosh.
Made me drive 5 hours upstate.
I'm going to tell you, Shai doesn't know this. He doesn't even know this. So at one point, like, you used to, like, people would send packages during the Corona. I said the break, Corona, and, like, you would open them. I was like, perfect. I'm going to send some up to the office. I don't know if it even got there.
Sent the merch?
Yeah.
I think
one of the boxes, it showed the address. I'm like, oh, bet. Screenshotted it. I'm like, we're going to send it to him because he's going to open it. It's going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you even got it.
I did, but at the time, I didn't think I knew.
Fully appreciate the brand.
Because some of the things I don't know where it comes from. Like, I may have heard of it and be like, oh, shit, but I didn't.
We got to resend it.
No, we're going to bring it.
No, bring it. No, just bring it to the office. The
What size are you, large?
Come on, that logo is hard, too.
Appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, thank I'm extra large. I'm working on it, though. Don't judge, bro. Come on. For real. Damn, these wrists are looking real.
I'm home, so yes.
Man, life is good, huh?
Could be worse. You know what, Callie, I had another watch on when we interviewed Callie. He was like,
wow,
podcast doing well, huh?
Podcast is doing great.
Yeah. It's the big show. We call it the big show.
Business is booming.
Yeah.
Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody from Roc Nation. Shout out to Lenny S and the entire team. So we got
Lenny S, holla at your boy.
We're going to talk about that after this. Shout out to Jay Brown. I'm going to run down the entire team because in my mind, they're all friends. Shout out to Jay Brown. Shout out to Emery. Shout out to Ty. Shout out to Law. Shout out to Dad. Shout out to everybody.
Law reached out. He's
that's what I'm saying. We got to shout them out.
Shout them out.
We appreciate everything y'all have done. Biggs, Dame, of course. That's
family. That's family.
We appreciate everything that y'all have done for us, especially there's three of us that started. We're getting there, bro.
The biggest ever.
Let me get there. I told people when we sit down with Jay, leisure has been earned.
See that? Not if. When?
Oh, no. That's
a happy. We keep saying his name.
All signs are leading to it. It's so just a matter of time.
We appreciate everything you've contributed to our lives on a personal level. For me, for sure. Shadi, I'm sure Mike as well. And shout out to all the earners that had to listen to us always talking about these guys, and now we get to sit down with them. So this is dope. It's a full circle moment for us. And shout out to everybody at EYL University, all the artists there that are learning and spreading the word of entrepreneurship. It is beautiful to see not only you learning, but executing on the information. So shout out to y'all. And shout out to everybody supporting the merch. Merch team in full effect. Shout out to Bim and Smitty and Mike and everybody. Jamal, Yogi.
Shout out to two of my favorite albums.
Oh, yeah. Criminal Minded.
BX.
And The Blueprint.
BX Burrow.
The Blueprint Classic.
That's a fact. Yeah,
love you know the Bronx created hip hop, right?
Of course.
Stop, don't do
okay.
it.
Okay. I'm making sure I don't know about this guy. You might say Queens or something crazy.
Bridge is over.
It started with Nas with him.
The bridge is over.
No, don't do that.
Obviously, the bridge can never be over.
But it was.
But it was.
But it was. Like
what?
So, like it was. We didn't see Shan, and then Nas came. It was quiet.
You do acknowledge that, right?
Like, you can't. Yo, don't do that. We can't. You're not gonna give him that.
Wait. No. Of course.
KRS is one of those guys I got to meet too. I got a story. Like
KRS legend.
You have to talk to him about.
Legend. Kenny Parker legend.
Kenny Parker. D Nice man. Like TR-808.
Derek. That's my brother, man.
Yeah.
So happy for him.
I'm just thinking about the video of self-destruction and like all the people in that.
Self-destruction. I was like 10 years old.
Like 88.
I
remember taping it off a Video Music Box. Shout out to Nas for doing the Video Music Box documentary.
I didn't see that. Go watch that. I heard it was good.
So fire.
I heard it was good. Jay's in that, right?
a lot of people in that. Yeah, I remember coming home every day, 3:30 to videotape those. Like, oh, we're gonna miss this new video. Yep. So, y'all don't know what VHS is though. It's all good.
All right, guys. Thank you for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.